Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means? Time for a little bit more of this tasty live show on this Friday with Confirm and Send. But before we do, would you like to take a quick look at the market?
Sure.
Even the S&Ps up 35.50. Sad enough, they trade all the way up to 51.40, which is about 23 handles higher than we are right now, up over 50 on the day. We're actually trading near the lows of the day, as you could see. 51.12 and a quarter are the lows. We're 51.17, still up around 0.75 percentage point. NASDAQ up 154. Russell up only 3. Russell, the weakest of the group. And the Dow only up 30. Also the two weakest of the group, the Dow and the Russell, versus the E-mini S&Ps and the NASDAQ. Volatility down by 5 cents to 15.55. And bonds back down to 113.24, Sadnoff. I say that down to because you just sold them higher at 114 and change. So bonds selling off, market selling off a little bit, even though both are still up on the day. Bitcoin hanging out at 64,000 now. It was more like 64.5, 65 last time I quoted it. Oil up 72 cents. Gold up $11, catching itself a little bit of a bid at 23.54. Silver doing the same. Net gas under $2, sad enough, 1.918. Those are numbers we haven't seen in the last couple of days. It tried to make a little bit of a rally, flirting with 2.2, but it's now under $2. And of course, we had our earnings from last night. Microsoft, Google, both higher. That's all I got.
All right, let's take a look. Emails that came
Intel lower.
Emails that came into us overnight, and we got a ton of them yesterday because it was pretty busy trading yesterday. Let's take a look. John, you throw it up there? Okay, so this person writes, one of my favorite strategies is the wheel, and I recently learned about the buying power advantage of futures. If you had to pick a ratio of stock to futures positions where you could take 100% of your open stock positions if assigned and only manage the futures position, what would the ratio be? I think the better way to say this is, what would your ratio of stock to futures positions be when you're trading various strategies, or if you're doing something like a wheel strategy where you're accepting assignment of the underlying and selling something against it?
I don't know if I'm following the question. Now, one E-mini S&P equals 500 shares of SPY. I guess I could break it down by looking at what the beta weighted of, like, let's say...
No. That's not the question.
I don't understand it then.
Okay, the question is...
I mean, the wheel strategy, first of all, is just when you sell a naked put, you get assigned stock for argument's sakes, and then you sell a call against it. I don't get it.
Yeah, so what this person's asking, it's kind of... written funky, but the question is, when you have a portfolio of stock and stock options and futures positions together, what percentage of your positions are going to ultimately end up being stock positions, option positions, and futures positions, even if you're focusing on things like a wheel strategy, which means you're selling puts. And if it goes your way, you make money. If it goes against you, you accept. You accept assignment of the stock and then you sell calls against it. And what this person found is that instead of buying the underlying stock, which is expensive, you can buy the underlying future, take delivery of the future by selling puts, and then ultimately sell calls against it and use a lot less money. That's all they're saying. So what I wrote back to him and said was, I wouldn't go much higher than 80-20 or 75-25. That means listed options and stock on the 75 or 80% side and futures options on the 20 or 25% side. Just because you don't want to get into that six times leverage on too much stuff, but on 20 to 25% of your portfolio, it's fine.
I got you. I didn't understand the question.
Yeah, no, it's a little confusing the way he wrote it.
I thought he was trying to simulate the same strategies with futures.
They were, but just how much of the portfolio? It's about 20 or 25% max.
I got you.
Let's go next slide. So if you have multiple positions on an underlying and overall you're profitable, but some of the individual positions are losers, would you close out all the positions or just the specific winners?
The position in its totality, whatever you have on, is at a loss. There are no winners and losers.
No. He's saying overall, you're profitable.
Overall, you're profitable?
Yeah.
I'm managing it as one trade. I'm probably going to close it all. Now, I may open another trade, or maybe I might keep some strikes that I have on to fit my assumption, but I'm managing the winner. I'm probably taking it off.
I'm doing the exact same thing. We don't break apart. If we have multiple positions on in a single underlying, we just look at that as one position, like one underlying, one position type thing. We don't say we have, oh, three of these positions are winning and two of these positions are losing, so I'll take off the three winners and I'll leave the two losers and try to manage those. We don't do that. So we just look at the total position and then adjust it as a total position. So either we're taking off the total position or we're adjusting the total position. We're not breaking it apart. Let's go to the next slide. So in a smaller account, does it make more sense to stick with trading zero or one DTE trades because I can create more occurrences, or should the bulk of my trades be 45 DTEs, more like normal trades?
This is a very difficult question to answer. I'm going to try to answer it as if I had a smaller account and give you my assumption. So if I had a smaller account and I was looking to manage it and trade it on a daily basis, not looking to pay my electric bill, looking to do more than that, maybe a car payment or something bigger than an electric bill, I probably would stick to the closer 0 to 1 day. I don't know or think, you know, it's very hard to sustain in a smaller account that way, but at least you can get a big bang for your buck and you can be active in the market. The problem with a smaller account in 45 days, you have to have a much longer view. It moves a lot slower. I think it's, you know, the more intelligent way, because someday you're going to have, you know, more than a small account and you're going to want to learn how to trade and invest and utilize, you know, a bigger account, maybe a, you know, one that is not a Johnny account anymore. So I would prefer you to be in the 45 days, but I see the allure and the benefit of the 0 day power of making and losing money.
For me, this was an easier one. In a smaller account, it makes a lot more sense to give yourself the best chance of long-term success. And you have the best chance of long-term success with the longer duration. I know it's going to be a little slower. I know it's going to be times a little more frustrating, but you can adjust positions. You can extend duration. You can do a lot of different things. You have a much better chance of letting the mechanics work for you than you do in the shorter dated options. In the shorter dated options, you're putting a lot of pressure on being right and right, you know, early on and every time. So I would focus on the longer duration, hands down, not even an argument. Let's go next slide.
Not much you can do with $5,000 in 45 days. It's hard, Tom.
I know. I hear you. I know. I am long in a stock, which has sold off over the last few months. I sold calls on the way down, and now the stock has rebounded. Putting some of my short
has call, rebounded some, putting my call in the money.
I know, but I'm changing the English to make it correct. Putting some of my calls that I sold, now they're in the money. So what do you recommend to manage a trade like this? What do you do? Do you roll the calls out? Do you roll them out? What do you do?
Sure, you can roll them out. You can roll them up if your assumption hasn't changed. Absolutely.
But don't forget, if you roll them out, if you roll them out and you roll them up, you're rolling for a debit.
Absolutely. You are rolling for a debit. But remember, the flip side of that is this is a good thing. Like when you sold the call, I'm assuming it was out of the money around the 30 delta, blah, blah, blah. Now that delta is closer to 50, 60, or 70, you've made back money on this trade. You buy back that option all with one click, and you sell the one. I would probably sell the one at the money or the first strike out of the money, not the 30 delta when I roll, just because I want to take less directional risk. But again, it's all up to your bias on the stock.
Yeah, so a lot of this is up to your bias, but you are down money on this trade now. So
But
it's
you're
not,
down less, right?
yeah, you're down less. So you started off with good intentions with the old covered call. Stock goes down. You keep rolling your calls down and down and down because you're just continually protecting yourself. And all of a sudden, the stock has a big up move. Now you're kind of, now you're, you've made back some of the money, most of the money, a good portion of the money, but you're still underwater. And now the stock's back where it originally started. So you're thinking to yourself, you want to kick yourself. I should have just held it and done nothing. But the reality is, well, what if the stock had kept going down? So at this point, you have to decide whether to buy back the calls and roll up for a debit, roll up and out for a debit, or, you know, or sell puts and cover everything and sell puts or do something like that. Those are the really the choices. Roll up and out for a debit or cover everything and sell an out of the money put. But those are your two choices. Yeah, I mean, what would we recommend? We'd probably cover everything and sell a short put. But
Sure.
that again, you know, it's there's not a huge difference between the two. Let's go to the
Correct.
next slide. So I place more iron condors than anything else. I try to stay around the 10 to 16 delta on the short positions. I look for liquid stocks or futures with high IVR and then place them at 45 days to expiration with profitability from 70 to 90% and manage a 21 DTE. My question is, most of the time, my P&L, when I initially put the trade on, is red until implied volatility drops. Is there something I am doing wrong or could do differently? Said differently, is there a way to become profitable earlier than what I have experienced?
First of all, everything you said in the first part of this is the way that we would do it too, manage and roll, and the probability of success works out to what you're showing 70, 90% if you're using those as your entry deltas. What could you do? I mean, you can get a little bit wider with your iron condor to simulate more of a strangle that might help with some of the time that it's taking for this to become profitable. You could avoid earnings if they're coming because that's going to keep volatility up, especially on an iron condor that's a little bit tighter between the long and the short. But other than that, and not changing the strategy, no, I think you're in the right ballpark. You could do it right before vol drops, but I don't know how to tell you when to do that.
You know, well, then you'd be a genius. I mean, then we would all be geniuses if we could do
Sure.
that. I think you just have to understand the statistics here. I don't think it's every trade, but
Course.
we've done a lot of research on this,
But it
and
feels like it sometimes in an iron
yeah, it
condo.
feels like
It's a
it. You put it
long
through this.
time.
Yeah, you go through these stages where volatility, you know, is expanding. You're putting things on at good prices, but it's still expanding. And you know, you're in the red. We found that 70, 75, 80% of all trades have are in the red, even if they're high probability trades. At some point, they're going to have negative ticks. The statistical chance of a trade that even has a 70 or 80% chance of success having a being a negative tick at some point is almost 100%. So don't overthink this like you're doing something horribly wrong. You're really not. You're probably doing everything exactly right. And, you know, it's just the probability of a trade being in the red is probably exactly what it's supposed to be. But just hang in there because you're doing everything right. The trades are going to work.
Okay.
Let's take a look at the next slide. So this person writes, I'm having a hard time getting my brain wrapped around the ticks in the bonds. Can you please explain them?
The ticks in the bond futures, third,
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. I mean, 32 is what you're looking at for the 32 ticks. So it goes from whole number 31 to whole number period. So it'd
So,
be
yeah. So this is something that I mean, listen, this it is when you guys, most retail customers got into this business, everything has been decimalized, right?
Yes.
Virtually on the security side, everything is simple. It's been decimalized, which is really nice. On the future side, for some crazy ass reason that none of us have ever been able to, well, we understand it, but we've never been able to accept the reasoning for it, hey, we don't want to change, is essentially the reason on the future side. We've been doing it this way for 100 years and we don't want to change it, which is idiotic and asinine. But because everything on the security side has been simplified and decimalized. So on the future side, not everything has been moved into decimals. So they still use fractions for certain things. And when you look at bonds, it is really confusing because you're not used to using fractions. So the bonds trade in 30 seconds. And just think about this. 32-30 seconds make up one full point. Uh-huh. One full point is $1,000.
That's right.
So each 30 second is $31.25.
Yeah.
Now I know to a retail investor, that's like, oh my God, what? I don't use fractions. I don't know what 3/30 seconds is, but just think about like 3/30 seconds is 3 times 31.25.
And the options are half of that, then they're double the tick, 64.
Yeah. And then the notes, which are half of a bond tick, which is, I know, it's crazy. We fight with them. We're like, originally they didn't want to change because they didn't think there was actually retail customers that traded bonds and notes, but there are. And it's absolutely ridiculous that they haven't changed still. Everything should be decimalized. We built our first software platform. We tried to decimalize bonds to make it easier for everybody. And then it was complete chaos.
Yep.
We couldn't figure everything out the reverse way. So if you want to get your hands, arms, whatever around bonds, the easiest way to think about this, okay, the way a full point in bonds is $1,000, 16 ticks is $500, and 8 ticks is $250. So like today, the bonds are up 17, right? The ZBs are up 17. Mm-hmm. 17 ticks in the bonds is just like I said, 16 ticks is $500. So 17 ticks is $531.
And 25 cents, isn't it?
And 25 cents.
Yes, right.
Anyway, that, yes, it's confusing, but I hope that helps to explain it. There's tons of stuff, you know, on the CME side about this. And there's some stuff on Tasty Live about this. Yeah, we know it's confusing, but it's not us. I promise you. We have no say in this matter. It's very still good. Amazing product. Okay. So don't confuse the stupidity of the teams that run the exchanges that don't want to change this with the genius of the product, because the product is great.
Let's take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more Tasty Live coming up next with This Week in Stocks. My man Jamal next. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.